Hey, it's Flora. Today we're going to start with a story.
Hi, Flora. I'm calling about your request for a meal you can't forget. So the meal I can't forget was when we were newlyweds, my wife and I, which is now almost 30 years ago. And we were living in our first apartment in Maryland. And it was a snowy night, and we decided we'd go out for a walk. We didn't have any kids because we were just newly married. And it was just one of those nights that it was continuing to snow, and we were madly in love, still are, but we were madly in love, and we were walking around and had a little snowball fight, and then we came in. It was incredibly cold, and my wife had made a pot of homemade chicken noodle soup. And on top of that, she made homemade bread, and then to go with the bread, she took honey and mixed it with butter. And so we had honey butter, homemade bread, and this chicken noodle soup. And I just remember sitting there across the table from her, just enjoying this delicious soup. And you know, the warm feeling of being inside after walking in the snow for a long, long time. And just thinking, you know, there was limitless possibilities for the two of us. The future was unknown, and we just were just so wide-eyed and optimistic about the things that could happen between us. And that meal is just one I'll never forget.
A meal you can never forget. That's what today's show is all about. Holidays are coming up, but a lot of us are still stuck at home, apart from the people we love. So this week, some comfort food. We are going to crash other people's special meals. ELT listeners, you invited us into your homes, you pulled up an extra chair, set a new plate at the table, and told us about the meals that have defined your life. We laughed, we cried, we salivated, and here are some of our favorites.
I'm Margaret Stewart. I am calling from San Diego. I'm a firefighter out in Los Angeles.
Tell me about this memorable meal.
So it was... It's funny because it's not something I have thought about in years, but as a West Point cadet, my junior year, my roommate and I were sitting on the floor of our dorm. It was after 11:30 at night, so we couldn't have any lights on, but it was February 24th, 1991, and it was the day the ground forces invaded for Desert Storm. And we were sitting there eating what may sound odd, but it's delicious, was a pizza crust, a hot pizza crust with cream cheese.
You had to eat the inside of the pizza too, right?
No, we actually would order a plain pizza crust with nothing on it. It was something my roommate loved, and she had introduced it to me. There's not much around West Point, but there was a pizza place that would deliver. And so it was hot. We had cream cheese, and we're spreading it. It's melting into the pizza crust, and we were sitting there in silence listening to Wolf Blitzer talk about Desert Storm. We had friends who had just graduated that were there. We didn't know what was going to happen. We were worried for them. We knew that it could be us in another year. The generations now can't really imagine it because all you've ever known is our country at war. But my generation at that time hadn't, you know, we hadn't been in a large-scale armed conflict as a country. And I think it was that kind of reality hits you. You're like, well, my friends who were just here a few months ago, they're at risk. And that could be us in a year. So it was anxiety, it was a little bit of fear as to what was going to happen, but also that sense of responsibility, like, this is what we signed up for. We may not have ever expected to actually have to do it, but it was always a possibility. So there's a lot of mixed emotions, but we were eating this really scrummy pizza crust with cream cheese.
My name is Janae. I'm 27 years old, calling from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. When I was a child, I lived in Maryland with my grandparents. If you're from that area, they'll say Maryland. They don't say Maryland or Maryland. It's Maryland. I lived in Maryland, and I used to have a problem with wanting to eat in the morning, and I would just fuss and fight. I just didn't want anything. And my grandmother is a Southern woman. She strongly believed that you can't leave in the morning without having breakfast. Breakfast is the most important meal of the day. So if it was a good morning where I actually woke up when she told me to wake up and, like, you know, brush your teeth and all that, then I would sit at this table. I can see it clear as day. It was like, do you know back in the day when they would have those, like, marble tables and it has, like iridescent coloring?
Yeah, like a 50s Formica table.
And it had, like, either a gold or a silver trim. I just remember it had that distinct trim around the edge of the table because I would pick at it when I didn't want to eat my vegetables. And I would be sitting at that table, and in the kitchen, in the corner, in the top corner, there's, like, a small TV, and I'm watching cartoons and just spooning my version of cereal.
What was it?
Cream of wheat. I had never made cream of wheat for myself, ever. Anytime I ever had it, I would always just go to my grandmother's and ask her to make it for me. To the point where even as an adult, I'd be like, Mom, can you make me some cream of wheat and then take a big bowl of it back home to my apartment? And we had this joke where I'd be like, you got to teach me how to make this. Girl, I'm going to teach you. And we would always joke that I need you to teach me. She's taught me so many other recipes and things to cook. And she never taught me cream of wheat, but we would always joke about it. Died almost 2 years ago at this point from cancer and just being really sick, and I was not ready. So maybe like 6 months after she passed away, I decided that I wanted to have it. I really was craving it, and it took me several times to make it. I followed the instructions the first time, that wasn't quite right, and then I realized, okay, it's about the seasoning. The secret is you need salt and sugar. I don't know how she did it. She would make vats of it. I'm talking like big, big mama pans of cream of wheat and be able to just eyeball the seasoning. I don't know how she did it. I'm making a small pan and I'm like messing it up. I'm jacking it up. It's too salty. It's too sweet. It's not quite right. It's too buttery. The milk is runny. It's not creamy enough. You know what I mean? And the first time I got it right, it was like sensory nostalgia. Like the taste of it sent me immediately back, and it just felt like a hug from her. And I really started to tear up because I realized that, like, I can have a moment with her even if she's not here.
This is Brandon. I'm calling from Toronto. I'm calling about the best bowl of grapes that I've ever eaten.
Give me the backstory on these grapes.
So this was a very interesting time in my life. Lots of traumatic things had happened in the previous, like, 5 years. And it all precipitated in this really terrible episode of depression and anxiety. One of the things that I'd faced was that I'd lost my sense of taste. And I didn't realize that I'd lost my sense of taste until when I was talking to the psychiatrist, and he was asking me, how do you feel about food? Do you taste food? And then it really hit me that I hadn't been able to taste food in a while. Like it had just kind of disappeared on me. Finally, I got put on medication, and about, I want to say maybe 3 or 4 weeks into taking it, one afternoon, I remember having bought a bunch of grapes from a street stall. They were like maybe reddish, almost purple. And then I put up one grape in my mouth, and it was this explosion of flavor and taste. It was so sweet. I'd never tasted anything that sweet in my life. Like, I remember just laughing out loud to myself, having tasted this grape. And then I just ate the whole bunch of grapes. Like, I just swallowed it down because it was so, so sweet. I mean, just thinking about it makes me so happy.
It sounds almost euphoric.
It was. It was euphoric. I didn't think that joy was possible for me anymore. I just hadn't, like, laughed in a way that wasn't bitter in a very long time. It was like stepping back from the precipice, for sure. It was like I'd come back to life.
After the break, drinking with your mom.
On the cocktail menu, there was a habanero martini, and I was intrigued.
My name is Johnny Tran. I am from Dallas, Texas, and I am calling about my mom's pho. The pho is the best in the world, for real. Pho real.
Tell me about the pho.
Okay, it's a traditional Vietnamese beef noodle dish, and the main ingredient that takes so much work is the broth. It's a very rich, flavored broth that takes a long time to simmer, and it's just so good. In Branson, Missouri, the town where she lives, there's not a lot of Vietnamese food or culture. So growing up, my parents, they actually owned a Chinese-American restaurant, and they would work 7 days a week. The only day they had off was Christmas. But even though if it was a long week, my mom would always make sure to make pho for me every Sunday. The routine normally would be on Saturday night, she would start the pho, like late at night, and just let it simmer over a low heat. Then she would kind of tend to it throughout the night, and then Sunday morning, she would chop more things, add more things to the pot, and then it would be finally ready.
I like your description. She would chop things, she puts them in, and magically it's done.
That's what it seems like, because when you watch her work, it's so fast. All you see is some chopping and throwing.
When did you realize that this meal was important to you?
So after I left home and went to college, I was craving it. I was going around to different pho restaurants, trying different pho's, and they were great, but it's nothing like my mom made. This year, actually, I sat down with her and I asked her to show me how to make it. And the first time I made it myself here, it took a little bit of trial and error, but I got it to work. And then as soon as I took my first bite, it felt like home. I could close my eyes and just be there.
How do you think it compares to your mom's?
Well, you can't tell her, but I think I have a little bit better edge on her in terms of flavor.
Johnny, I don't know. Are you sure you want to go on the record with that?
I think I have to, yeah. It's the facts.
Hi, Flora. This is Nishan. I'm calling you from Toronto in Canada. I'd like to tell you about my first coffee. I had my first coffee when I was about 9 years old. I'm of Syrian origin. My family lived in Aleppo. And we took a trip, a car trip, to the Mediterranean every summer. So it was several cars, my parents' best friends. And this car trip required us to go up mountains, windy roads. I was a child in the back seat of a station wagon, and I got car sick. And then at the top of the mountain, we stopped, and one of the moms from another family, she realized I was sick and gave me, she had a thermos, and inside it, there was this beautiful, hot, black coffee. She poured some coffee in the cup and handed it to me. I stepped outside, and I drank my first coffee ever. And I had a wave of well-being that I felt from my head down to my toes as the warm coffee calmed my stomach and I inhaled the beautiful, foggy mountain air. And since that moment, I've come to associate coffee, black coffee, with an absolutely wonderful top of the mountain well-being feeling. And that's the feeling that I look for every morning when I wake up and pour myself hot black coffee to drink.
I'm Jameson from San Antonio, and I'm calling about the special meal that my wife and I would make together. We had a whirlwind romance. We had been dating for a month, and we had moved in together, and everybody thought that we were just crazy. I was like, no, she's my soulmate. Like, I'm meant to be with her. And she was saying the same thing to her family. So 6 months in, it was our half anniversary, and we made each other surf and turf, and I picked out the lobster tails. She picked out the steaks. She made Brussels sprouts. And it was the first meal that we really made truly together. We just celebrated how happy we were and how much in love we were with each other. And so every time that we had, you know, like a relatively large event, we would make each other surf and turf. We made it on our first anniversary also. And then a week later, she got diagnosed with leukemia. And so, you know, now here it is. On Thursday, it's going to be the half anniversary of her passing away. And I'm going to make surf and turf. Surf and turf, that was our meal to celebrate the love that we had and the happiness that we had. Yeah, she passed away, but I still consider myself so lucky because I got 3 years with the love of my life. And some people never get three months or 3 weeks or 3 days or even 3 minutes with who they're supposed to be with. But I got 3 years.
This is Oz Du Soleil from Portland, Oregon, talking about a habanero martini. Well, I was getting ready to leave Chicago and move to Portland, and my brother-in-law, my sister, and my mother wanted to take me out to dinner before I got in my car and left. I noticed on the cocktail menu there was a habanero martini, and I was intrigued. So I ordered it. And we're talking about when am I moving, when am I getting in my car, why Portland? And my mother is looking at this martini. And to my knowledge, she has never had a drop of alcohol in her life. I believe she spent her early years around some alcoholics, and booze is just bad, right? But then I'm sipping this martini, and she starts asking me questions about it. How spicy is it? Is it good? I said, well, they didn't do a good job of integrating the heat. Well, is it really hot? Well, it's okay. And then my mother, who has never had alcohol in her life, and I'm 49 years old at the time, she says, can I have a spoonful of it just to taste it? What? Okay. All right. So I take a spoon and I get a spoonful and carefully pass it across the table to my mother, and we don't spill it, and she tastes it, and oh, it's okay. And that was it. She was curious, and we just had that moment together where she was this different person, you know, like she might, you know, start wagging her finger that booze is bad, you know. No, she didn't do that. She actually wanted a spoonful of it. She showed me another side of herself. It was a safe environment that around people who love each other, appreciate each other. And I could say the only time I know my mother has had any type of alcohol was with me on this Bon Voyage dinner.
She toasted you.
Yep, she did.
To your new future.
That's right. Her spoon up against my glass.
What's her name?
Mary.
Cheers, Mary.
Cheers.
Thank you to everybody who called with stories. We loved listening to them. And if you have a question you can't get to the bottom of, like you've tried, you have Googled already, call us, 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Caitlin O'Keefe, Stephanie Werner, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka and Doug Barron. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Scored by Bobby Lord, Emma Munger, and Dara Hirsch. Mixed by Dara Hirsch. ELT is a Spotify original podcast. Goodbye.